pagi.
Tā tau i te whānau, e hihi anau te whakaiti, te reo, tēnā waiata, ke hoki ki ngā kōrero, wanting to bring the volume down on that beautiful waiata. Welcome back to our show, the Kuaka Marangaranga Show on Radio Te Hiko o Te Ika here in Kaitaia. I'd like to say a very good morning to us all this morning, and going to the phones at this time to welcome Peter Malcolm. We're talking about the Income Equality Project, Closing the Gap. Going to the phone this morning to welcome our guest to our show. Good morning. Good morning to you, Peter, and welcome to Radio Te Hiko Teika.
Kia ora.
How are you this morning, Peter?
You don't want to know. I've got a head cold, so I've got a streaming nose.
it's been raining. It's hot out here in Kaitaia. It's stopped at the moment, but yeah, no, we've had a bit of rain.
It's raining down here too, but so if I've got to stop suddenly, you'll understand why.
Yes, absolutely.
I needed to tell you that.
Absolutely.
So look, apart from that, I'm good.
Excellent. Look, thank you so much, Peter, for talking to us this morning. I want to talk to you about the Income Equality Project. What is the Income Equality Project, please?
About 4 or 5 years ago, I read a book called The Spirit Level by a couple of British epidemiologists. Epidemiologists are people who look at health trends in society and try and find reasons for those particular trends. Now, the authors of this book are Wilkinson and a Pickett, who are British. They discovered that there is a causative relationship between income inequality and many social issues. In other words, countries that have high income gaps, in other words, the gap between the wealthy, the very wealthy, and the poor, the larger that gap, the worse a whole range of things are. In particular, teenage pregnancies, heart attacks, a number of social issues, drug taking, general health issues. But further than that, further researchers have shown that it also has a serious impact on the cohesiveness of society. In other words, the ability of people to get on and work together. They've also discovered that, in fact, it's not a good thing for the economy either. So the larger the gap, or the smaller the gap, the better the economy. And so this was what I discovered. This is what I didn't discover, but this is what I read about some 4 or 5 years ago. And a very good friend also read the book and said, "What are you going to do about it?" And so we set up this organisation called Income Inequality, Aotearoa New Zealand Incorporated, it's an incorporated society. We were going to work on the principle that if we could get that information out there to the general public, then they would want to see something happen. So far, over the last 4 or 5 years, we have got somewhere between 2,000 and 3,000 supporters up and down the country. We have a website. If people are interested, they should go to that website, www.closingthegap.org.nz. And we continue to try and get that information out there to people so as to persuade people that we seriously need to improve the income of those at the bottom and reduce the income of those at the very top. And so that's, if you like, that's our project.
Wow, that sounds like a lot.
Yeah, it is.
As you probably understand, now we, as well as other areas around the country, the Northland area, where there's not a lot of work, there is a lot of difference in terms of the income or the pay packet that different families have and that different. So it does have a resonance for us, Peter.
Well, I'm not surprised. You know, I have travelled up to Northland a number of times. In fact, we spent a little bit of time in Kaitaia and a nice little town. But you're right about the levels of poverty, the levels of unemployment, and when you go to places like the Bay of Islands and some of those other places and you look at the huge wealth of some of the homes that have been built around that area, it gives you a very clear understanding of income inequality as far as Northland is concerned. Now, we, having sort of tried to get the information out there, we need to just keep going because a lot of people actually don't believe that scenario. A lot of people also believe that particularly that if you reduce the income of those at the top, you will destroy incentive, motivation, innovation. Now, the research, in fact, shows that that is not true. That if you go back to the 70s and 80s, when there were very high tax rates, I can remember that I think the top tax rate in New Zealand was somewhere around the mid 60 cents in the dollar. And I know that that wasn't a problem for those people, because in those days, people believed that if you earned a lot of money, then you had a very strong obligation to make sure you return some of that to government to be redistributed. In other countries overseas, in Britain, for example, the top tax rate was 98 cents of the dollar at one stage. Now, since that time, because of the power of the wealthy over the political system, they've dropped those top tax rates, and that has significantly exacerbated the income gap. The second thing that happened in New Zealand in particular, in the early 90s, the benefit levels were significantly cut, and in real terms, there's been no serious increase in benefit levels since that time. We understand on the 1st of April this year, there is going to be a small increase in benefit levels, but it's nowhere near enough. There seems to be an attitude that if you paid people on benefits a reasonable amount, all you'll do is encourage them to stay on the benefit. The research shows that that is not true. That in fact, if you can provide people with the opportunity to get jobs, most people, not all, but most people want to take up that opportunity. They actually want to do something for their income. They don't want to stay on benefits. They actually want to make positive contributions to society. And so you could easily increase benefit levels. In fact, I think the living wage concept is an excellent one. You know, at the moment, the minimum wage doesn't provide people with enough money to live on decently. The living wage concept, I think the current suggestion is that it should be $19.40 an hour, as opposed to the current minimum wage or just over $14 an hour. But that minimum wage concept, I think, should be carried over into the benefits as well, so that people who are on benefits in fact, don't have to live in poverty, don't have to live from hand to mouth, don't have to shortchange their kids in terms of going to the doctor, going on field trips at the schools, and so on and so forth. And so, you know, that's the first thing I would do, is increase the income, whether benefits or paid work, to a reasonable level, somewhere around what's known as the living wage. The second thing, of course, is that you've got to pay for that somehow, and you pay for that by increasing the tax rates. First of all, there are a lot of people who can avoid paying tax because they've got smart accountants, they can set up trusts, and they can do all sorts of things to avoid paying tax. So the first thing is to make sure that, I believe the principle is that if you make money, you should pay tax on it. No matter how you make that money, in fact, I actually believe that a comprehensive capital gains tax is one of the ways of making the system much more fair, so that if you buy and sell anything, I would actually include the family home as well, that if you sell the family home and there has been an inflation-adjusted significant difference between what you paid for it and what you get when you sell it,
yes,
I believe you should pay tax on that. So a comprehensive fair tax system, which is also progressive. You know, as I said to you before, a lot of economists who go along with the ideas that I've been talking about say that we should have a top tax rate of around 70 cents in the dollar. And so that would certainly provide sufficient income to pay for significant increases in the benefit levels and a significant increase in the minimum wage. Our biggest problem is to get people to understand the research. They seem to be guided much more by their anecdotal evidence and by the fact that the media, and I'm sorry, I hope I'm not getting at you here, but the media tend to look for stories where people rip off the system. And they don't tell you that's a very, very small minority. But it leads to building up the impression that there are lots of people on benefits who rip off the system. And that's just not true. The actual research shows that, as I said a moment ago, that and the other comments that made is that, you know, people on benefits, they spend all their money on booze and fags and drugs and all those sorts of things. Again, the research shows that that is simply not true.
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Great. I really, really appreciate talking to you, Peter. I'd like to come back to you in the future and talk to you. Thank you for speaking to us this morning about the Income Equality Project. I look forward to talking to you in the future. Final words from you, please.
Thanks for the opportunity of getting that message out there. I think we're agreed that Northland is a place where that message needs to be got out there. We need to have some effective action to reduce inequality, and that would seriously benefit a lot of people up in Northland. Ka kite.
Kia ora, ka kite anō. Peter Malcolm talking to us this morning. Whānau, stay tuned to our show, Radio Te Hiku o Te Ika, right here in the heart of Kaitaia.